woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
To Wild Michigan, I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, being brought to you in part by our friends at Conquest Scents in Davison, Michigan, makers of VS1 and Evercalm, plus a whole line of other scents for hunting. Great stuff, man, all in a stick, all being produced right here in Michigan, in Davison. Doug and Kieran Roberts are good friends and been sponsoring the show for quite some time now. We thank them. Also want to thank our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Mike Green was on with us earlier today. He is the owner of Not Just Guns. Talked a little bit about competition shooting. Also, I talked a bit about their auction that goes on every Wednesday night, and you can pick up your firearm or your suppressor, whatever it is. I don't want to say suppressor because that takes, no matter when you buy it, you got about a year process to get that squared away so you can have that. But everything else, pretty much, you can get next day as long as all your paperwork's in order. And I want to welcome our newest sponsor, United Deer Farmers of Michigan, joining us here. UnitedDeerFarmersOfMichigan.com. We'll have a link on our website, WildMichiganRadio.com. And they also have another website, TheTruthAboutCWD.com, that you can find out what's going on in the world of chronic wasting disease, up-to-date information there as well. So all of that in one handy-dandy opening, and our good friend Lance Valentine from Teaching Fishing is joining us here. Lance, welcome, and real quickly, we were reminiscing about the good old days and cars and boats being actually on the top of vehicles, which, you know, over time, you forget about that. It just doesn't become commonplace anymore, and when you see it, if you don't see it, you don't think about it. But
yeah, we had so much fun, you know. I mean, I was telling you, my first car was a 1971 four-door Chevy Impala that my uncle, when he passed away, left to my parents, and they used it for a couple of years, and they kind of gave it to me, and it had a set of canoe carriers on it. We had the cabin up there on the Isaba River, and you know, we had a cedar canvas covered canoe that we had, and a Penyan canoe, and you know, we'd drive two cars down to the landing and leave the one with the canoe carriers, and we'd drive back to the cabin, and we'd take our fishing trip, and we'd the car would be there, and we'd throw the canoe on the top. And when I got the car, I had a 14-foot Lone Star aluminum fishing boat and a 1949 Johnson 5-horse engine, and my buddy and I we'd throw that Lone Star on top of the car, strap it down, throw the Johnson in the back in the trunk, in the big huge trunk, and throw all of our tackle there, and we had all our rods in a rod tube, and we'd get to the lake, and it'd take us 3 hours to get ready to go fishing, and we'd go fishing for a couple hours, and most of that time spent trying to get the motor to start, and we'd fish for 3 or 4 hours, we'd come back, and we'd have to reverse the process, put all of our rods away, take all of our reels off, put the rods in a rod tube, put the reels in the case, put all the tackle boxes away, take the engine off, lay it in the trunk, get the boat back up on top, and go home. But, man, I'm going to tell you, we fish more then than I do now with all the really fancy gear and awesome stuff I have because, I still love to fish, obviously, but there's just something about that time when you're 15, 16, 17 years old and, trying to find yourself, and you've got this passion for something you do. And I was lucky I had two or three friends that really shared my passion for fishing. And what a great time in your life that is when you have something that you love to do. You have somebody that you care about that loves to do the same thing you do. And just those adventures. It reminds me a lot of any of your listeners ever read, Patrick McManus. Brian and I were kind of, that type of thing, camping out in the backyard. And our subdivision, when we first moved in, was barely developed in the back. And there was a little pond. And we'd literally walk back there and camp. We're quarter mile from the house, and it's just a big dirt thing with a little bit of pond, and we'd go back there and camp overnight and think we were fishing and cook our own meals. And it just what a great time growing up, and thank God I had that.
Oh yeah, and the thing is, it didn't discourage you. That didn't discourage you, the time it took to get rigged up, off the car, trying to start the motor. I get that whole thing. You know, this isn't the electric start, you know, generation that we're talking about. This is granddad's 49 Merc on the back of a boat.
there's a little L-shaped valve you had to open like half a turn, then a little wing valve you had to turn open once, and you had to prime it four times and pull it. If it didn't start, you had to shut it all down, wait 2 minutes, and start all over again. And you know, but man, oh man, what a great time, you know, we had. And unfortunately, I don't think too many kids get that kind of life anymore, to just have a friend or two and just have a good time, make it up as you go. And man, what great times those were. And you know, they developed character, they developed the ability to think for yourself, they developed, you know, the ability to kind of solve a problem. And just those friendships when you're just you and a buddy and you're just doing something, those are things that unfortunately I don't think a lot of people nowadays have. And I'm just so thankful for you know, all that time, good and bad, that we had.
You know, Lance Valentine is our guest here from Teaching Fishing. Before we even get started on our regular conversation, we're looking back at things that we had to do. And I really think it made us better to try and solve those problems with the mechanics of things, you know, and maybe that taught us patience for learning electronics.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I think for everything, right? I think it taught us patience and empathy for other people. It taught us patience and empathy for, you know, fixing something. It taught us, you know, how to have the right tools. And if you don't have the right tools, how to make the wrong tools work. It taught us how to not panic, because all panic did was get you in a worse situation than you were already in. And it just taught you some skills that, as hard as you try in a formal environment, you just can't teach those things unless, you know, you're out doing it. And we didn't have the help of Google. We didn't have the help of, you know, adults all the time. We just freaking figured it out. And you know, there's times today I, you know, things happen. I just go, okay, just stop for me. Just got to figure this out. And, you know, sometimes you go back on some of those things that you learn, and just you know, the satisfaction of figuring it out, and just the ability to know that you can figure it out, that you don't need all the help that, you know, people take for granted nowadays. You don't need all that to figure this out by yourself. And now, a lot of that goes back to fishing. You know, we get so dependent on electronics, and I'm a big electronics guy, and, you know, the equipment we have and line counter reels and all the cool equipment we have, and, you know, trolling motors that can follow contours, and that's all awesome, and we should use all that. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice just for maybe a weekend to just go fishing with two rods and a tackle bag and, you know, no electronics and a buddy from way back when, and just kind of, you know, figure out why we really fell in love with the sport to start with.
What do you mean? That's what I do anyway. I don't have electronics. You kidding me? No, I mean, look, I've got a couple of things, but believe me, it's not on my boat. And it just, you know, but again, when you step out of that, what has become a comfort zone with electronics and with all of the cool stuff, and you take the time to learn to physically evaluate what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, and apply it to that task, I really think that really can go a long way, again, in fishing. You know, it just, when you're forced to think for yourself, believe me, you will come up with some answers pretty doggone fast.
Or you won't catch anything, and those are your two choices, right? It's kind of the old burn your boats thing, right? You know, the old civilizations used to drop their warriors off on an island and burn the boats and go figure it out. You're either going to fight, you're going to win, or you're going to die. So, obviously, fishing is not that critical, but, you know, you figure it out and you catch them, or you don't figure it out and you don't catch them. And that's a pretty simple, you know, pretty simple equation. You either get it right and you catch them, or you don't get it right and you don't. And you learn something and you figure it out for the next time. And I don't think we do enough of that. I don't think we do enough critical thinking, you know, when we're fishing. I don't think we pay enough attention to, you know, I think it probably bleeds over into hunting too. Some of the equipment we have and these blinds and, you know, no scent clothing and all the stuff that we have that, again, are awesome and they're fantastic. But, you know, how many guys really pay attention which way the wind's blowing and pay attention what's going on around them now, because there's equipment that they don't have to be successful.
Absolutely. Lance Valentine, Teaching Fishing, looking backwards, and we're going to look forward here in the next segment with him. Hang on, please. Find us online. Find us on our Facebook page as well, Wild Michigan, here on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world at wildmichiganradio.com, our website. You can pick up the podcast there. Also want to thank our friends at Commemorative Bucks of Michigan. They have their event coming up on March 21st. Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort is their big fundraiser and banquet event. I will be your MC for that. Lots of gun giveaways, lots of raffles, lots of auctions. Just a great time. And the Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort is going to be a great venue. A change of location, as normally it was in Lansing, will be in Mount Pleasant, more centrally located in the state. And, of course, lots of other fun opportunities as well. And the show will go on, might I add. So we're looking forward to seeing you there, and we have an opportunity for you to join us there absolutely free on our Facebook page, so find out about that as well. Maybe win yourself a seat at the big kids' table with us here in Wild Michigan. And we are back to Lance Valentine from Teaching Fishing here on Wild Michigan. Lance, we kind of look back at some of the things that made us who we are today and how they shaped you, and now we're moving forward. You know, here we are, it's a new boat, it's a new season, and you are getting your boat ready to get geared up. At first, of course, you had to go through inspection since you have this new boat, but and you're a captain, so that's important to have all of these things in order. But you are rigging your boat right now. You use specific things because you have found that these are the things that have worked for you. It's not a sales pitch. This is what you have found to work for you. And I want you to talk about some of the things that you are using, because, I mean, it's a pretty bare bones boat by the time you get started.
Yeah, you know, we buy our boats really with nothing on them other than, you know, the bilge pumps and, you know, live well pumps and that type of stuff. And we do everything. And you know, the biggest thing we do, and again, you know, talking to a lot of, you know, regular fishermen, one of the things we do that's absolutely critical, and I'm going to start with a caveat, I don't do this. My friend Duncan that we just lost last year was my rigger, and now we've got a kid named Chris McCulley who actually learned from Duncan and has kind of learned some stuff from me on the hookups, and Chris is kind of taking us to the next level. So I don't get any credit for any of this at all. So, you know, the first thing that we do that's really important, and I think for a lot of people nowadays, especially with the amount of electronics we're putting on and the draw that electronics has, is, you know, quality batteries. And then we start with, you know, I'm an Interstate battery guy. I still use flooded wet cell batteries. I've tried gel batteries. I didn't see any increase in you know, inability to run longer or anything. You know, the new lithiums kind of intrigue me, but they're still kind of on the expensive side. So, you know, we run Interstate batteries, and the first thing we do is make sure we have clean power. So we run a big cranking battery to do nothing but turn over the big Suzuki, and then we run a deep cycle battery for nothing but electronics. And I would tell guys, if you have more than two pieces of electronics, you need to have a battery dedicated to do nothing but run your electronics. We mount that in the back of the boat. Then what we do is we run a set of 6-gauge wire up underneath the dashboard, and we install a high-quality, a company called Blue Sea Systems, a fuse panel that has a ground on it to that wire. Then all of our electronics get wired to that fuse panel. So if we have any issues, we don't have to worry about crimps on inline fuses. We don't have to worry about anything. If one unit goes out and the other units are working, we know our problem is between that fuse panel and that back of that unit. We don't have to go back and have 17 things on a you know, a wire nut on the back of a battery. We kind of keep everything clean. The other thing we do to charge that battery is, for very inexpensive, you can buy a little product called an add-a-battery. And what it is, it's an onboard charger that charges both your accessory battery and your cranking battery when you're onshore, but it has a voltage-sensitive relay on it. So when your engine fires up, it puts all that charge into your cranking battery, and as soon as your cranking battery is completely full, it takes all that charge from your alternator and puts it into your accessory battery. So you really don't have to worry about that. So power is huge. You know, this year we're going to go with four Lowrance Live units. I'm going to have two 12-inch units on the dash and two 9-inch units on the bow, and that just takes a lot of power. Now you add a marine radio, you add an Ethernet network, kind of hook all those together. You add a NEMA 2000 network so I can share waypoints. I can use the Suzuki has. I don't have any gauges in my boat, so all my engine data comes through the NEMA 2000 network, and my fuel. I have a fuel level electronic sensor in my fuel gauge that actually sends it to my LaRanch unit. So all of my gauges now for my Suzuki, I don't have anything on my dash. It's all going to be able to be seen on my LaRanch unit, either as a single page or as overlay data. So I can monitor things that you cannot monitor with an analog gauge. Engine temperature by degree. I can look at water pressure. Am I starting to lose water pressure? I actually, 2 years ago, saved the motor. I was watching my high temp when I was running wide open was starting to creep up 1 or 2 degrees every day or two, and my water pressure was starting to kind of drop down a little bit, PSI. I'm like, huh. Took it in. I had 4 blades on my impeller that were getting ready to snap. Now, I caught that because of those pieces of information. I caught that before those broke off in the water and caused a catastrophic failure. So having the ability to do all that, I can get to the tenth of a gallon how much gas I have in my tank, and to the tenth of a gallon how many miles per gallon I'm running. So you can see a huge difference in how much fuel you're using based on how you trim and where your throttle is. And you know, with gas prices at $4-$4.50 on the water,
right.
if I can save a couple gallons every day, you know, that's a big deal. So having your boat rigged up, there's so many things you can do with your boat nowadays. Don't just buy a unit, throw a transducer on the back of the boat and screw the unit to the dash. There are so many other things you can do boat rigging-wise that make a huge, huge difference in the way your boat performs.
Lance Valentine is our guest here on Wild Michigan, and if you missed any of that, you can pick it up on the podcast at our website, wildmichiganradio.com. One more quick thing about rigging is Trax Tech. That has been something that's been with you for a long time when it comes to mounting your riggers.
Yeah, you know, versatility, you know, I do all kinds of things. You know, I jig on the river, I troll for walleyes, I troll for salmon and lake trout, I do some crappie fishing, I do some vertical jigging, I drift through the weeds for walleyes. I do a lot of different things, and having the versatility to put in the accessories, the proper rod holders, and having them in the right place, the right accessories, is huge. So starting with a base of TraxTech track is paramount to this system. So every single inch of my gunnel has TraxTech track on it. So I run a 72-inch piece on my back gunnels. I run a 24-inch piece in front of my windshield, and then another 18-inch piece that as the boat kind of turns. So I have track around my whole boat. And that allows me to put rod holders where I need to, extra rod holders, have a net where I need it, tool holders, planer board holders. My rule is pretty simple. Nothing goes on the floor. So for as many rods as we're going to have out when we're fishing, we have that many rod holders open when we are fishing. So if we got 6 rods on a side, we've got 6 places to put them when we're fishing. We have 6 extra places to put them when we're not, because nothing bugs me more than laying a rod or a planer board or a pair of pliers on the floor. That's how stuff gets lost. So the tool holder combo, cup holders are a huge thing, right? On the river, I put 3 cup holders on both sides of the boat, so guys have a place to put their drink in the morning. It's up out of the way. If it spills, it goes in the water, not in the boat. It's not down by your foot where you're going to knock it off a little plastic cup holder. The ability to move my rod holder. So I may set up a different configuration for drifting through the weeds to walleye than I do for pulling offshore planer boards in open water. My setup for salmon fishing with a couple dipsy rods is different than my setup for walleye fishing. So having all that stuff able to slide into one piece of track is absolutely huge. And Jeff's made a great improvement for this year. The track used to just be a solid piece. You had to bring everything either in the front or off the back. You've now put a cutout in the track. You can actually bring things in from the inside and slide them, so you don't just slide everything off and make changes.
All right. Find them at teachinfishing.com or find them here on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Lance Valentine, thank you so much for joining us again, sir, and for sharing some memories and bringing us up to date with the new stuff.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Anytime you need me, let me know.
All right. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.